Turn around. Yeah, you're on. Oh, so am I.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm gonna hit record here.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, I got to do a couple of announcements. Huh. All right, if everybody mosey on back down to your seats. This is we got a lot of good speakers, but I've been waiting for this one. We also want to reiterate a few announcements real quick. Now that I've got my thinking back and can talk. RV people. Absolutely no gray tanks or black tanks being dumped yet. Okay, so hang on to that till you get the okay from Don Crisman or R.W. Blackwell. That's the girl I'm looking for there. April has a announcement for y'all.
Hello. So I just wanted to let you guys know, any of you that are have small children or kiddos that want to participate in the Socote Rocks event that we did last year where they came, we had the paint pens in the rocks. They paint the picture on the rocks and then hide it around camp so other kids can find it and then hide them again. That's kind of the gist of it. We had to reschedule it. It's supposed to be tomorrow at 3, but we had to move it to Sunday from 11 to 1. So if you camp next, and we missed announcements earlier, and that was my fault. So if you camp next to a family with small kiddos and can mention it if you see them, I'd appreciate it. I let the kids' classes know, the kiddos, to help tell their parents. But if you see anybody running around, just might mention it to them because we had a really good time with it last year. So, and some adults came and painted rocks, and it was fun. So Sunday, 11 to 1, is the time for Socote Rocks. Thank you.
And thank you. And just to clarify earlier, because I'm not always as clear as I think I am, they have the hot drinks, coffee, and things in the cafeteria put on by Sam and the Wewoka people is $1. The coffee and lemonade and refreshments out here, there is no charge for. Okay. Do what? All right, well, then without further ado, I present to you Nathaniel Stone.
All right, so we got 45 minutes on the clock. This is like a five-hour study. I'm going to do my best to bring it down into 45 minutes. Get with me afterward. I have this recorded in a two-part series, and then we're going to be getting some new information here, and then there's some overlap with the other stuff, but we'll move forward. So what I'd like to ask here is, let's go 3,500 years in the past, and imagine yourself around the time of Egypt, 3,500 years ago, before Eliyahu, before Elisha was here, and I was here to tell you that resurrection is possible, right? Resurrection is possible from the dead. Someone can come back from the dead. A lot of people here might be like this guy, I'm not quite sure if he knows what he's talking about. But now we have resurrection recorded in the scriptures. So what I want to share here is that teleportation, I'm going to talk about, and I'm going to define it first, scriptural teleportation. Now, there's a resurrection in the scriptures, and then there's teleportation, which is connected in with the two witnesses. Now, I'd like to first define the word teleportation, and you know, it's interesting when the scriptures is the best sci-fi novel, and you realize it's not science fiction, it's science fact. There's not a division between science and scriptures. What there is there's bad scriptural doctrine and there's bad data interpretation in science, and the enemy corrupts both houses, and he keeps it divisional to keep these things from coming together. And so we have things like evolution that is being taught. Now, there's data in evolution that is correct. It's being skewed towards, you know, that there is no creator. And then we have other radicalized doctrine in scripture that is keeping these two from coming together. But first, I'd like to share about this word teleportation, and, you know, the scriptures call it translation. You know, he was translated, and I'm going to show in the Old and the New Testament many aspects of this word teleportation, but first I'd like to define the word to teleport. So it is a form of supernatural travel. The etymology of the word tele is between or reaching over a distance. And the word port is like a gateway, a safe haven to carry something. So like transport, you have across and then like an ocean port. And so it's like across the ocean to transport, or between like two docks in a from like a trucking, you know, you transport cargo from one dock to another dock, from one port to another port. So the word tele, which would mean to carry from or reaching over distance, excuse me, tele, reaching over distance, telephone, reaching over distance, carried out between two remote points, a safe haven is carried. So to teleport, it's from one gateway to another gateway, or one location to another location supernaturally. So let's find some instances of scriptural translation or teleportation in there. But first, before we get into that, I'd like to talk about Enoch in Genesis 5:24. So, and Enoch walked with Elohim, and then he was no more, for Elohim took him. Now, I don't mean to break anybody's, you know, a lot of people with the two witnesses on who they believe that they are. They believe that the two witnesses are Moshe and Eliyahu, Moses and Elijah. And my thesis here that I'm going to present to you is that it is Moses and Elijah. But some of the questions that we have with, is it Moses and Elijah? Well, Moses has been dead for 3,500 years, and Elijah has been gone for 3,000 years. So how can it be Moses and Elijah? But the first thing, before we get into that, I'd like to first share about Enoch. And I don't mean to step on anyone's toes. I think that some people, whether they know it or not, might kind of elevate Enoch higher than he is, maybe with the book of Enoch or other things that are there. But I'm here to tell you, let's show in the scriptures that Enoch died. And I'm gonna share with you in that. And this, and if you don't agree, that's okay. But let's just let the word share here. This is the Heroes of Faith chapter, Hebrews chapter 11. We have, this is ISR, so belief is amunah in Hebrew that we have here. Or faith. So by faith, Habel, Abel. So by faith, Abel. By faith, Hanak. There we have. By faith, Noah. By faith, Abraham. And then we have here, by faith also, Sarah. And so from one, and him as good as dead, were born numerous as the stars of the heaven and countless as the sand, which is by the seashore, in Amunah, in faith, all these died. All these died. So, like, it doesn't say here all these but Enoch, because, you know, he didn't die. It says in faith all these died. So sometimes we got to split hairs. What is that? Hebrews 4:12, rightly dividing the word. We have to divide between soul and spirit, bone and sinew. So unless he made a division here or an addendum, the writer here of Hebrews said that in faith all these died. So let's split some hairs here in verse 5. What does he say? By faith, Hanak was translated so as not to see death. Does it say he didn't die? Or did he say that he didn't die? Or did he say that he didn't see death? For and he was not found because Elohim had translated him. It might not be the strongest argument. I understand it might not be the strongest argument. But what I want to first share is, when you get all the other data that is there, quite frankly, that point here is relatively inconsequential. But I just wanted to share here with Hebrews chapter 11 that it says, in faith all these died. And here, according to what it says, that he said that he didn't see death. And then it said that in faith all these died, including Hanak, including Enoch. So, you know, I wanted to first share that. But let's get into some cases of biblical supernatural travel. I'm going to use the word teleportation. You can use the word translation. Scriptures also say, in the Ruach of Yahuwah moved upon that person and then moved him. So we have some different terminologies. I don't want to say, I'm going to use the one word, teleportation, and I'm going to keep it simple, but we understand that where I'm getting that word is the etymology of it, which basically means between a distance, a gateway. So it's like a supernatural travel that is there. So what we have here is biblical supernatural travel. Here is Judges 3:18 in the Messenger. And before I get into this, you know, I wanted to ask how many, it's not a silly question, but appease me for a moment. How many people here believe in resurrection? Like I should hear, see everyone's hand up. If your hand isn't up, I would assume that you're like, I'm not gonna answer that question. I'm here for a reason, which is understandable. Resurrection is an uncommon miracle, but it is commonly known. Teleportation, a biblical teleportation, is an uncommon miracle, and it is uncommonly known. So I want to make this more commonly known throughout the scriptures. So here we have Judges 13:18, and the Hamalach Yahuwah, the messenger, the angel of the Lord, said to him, "Why do you ask my name since it is wondrous?" And Manoach took the young goat with the grain offering and offered it upon the rock to Yahuwah. He did wondrously while Manoach and his wife looked on, and it came to be as the flame went up toward the heaven from the altar, slaughter place, that the messenger of Yahuwah, the angel of the Lord, went up in the flame of the slaughter place altar, and Manoach and his wife were watching, and they fell on their faces to the ground. So here what we have is he's here on earth, and then he offers up an offering on the altar, and then he goes up supernaturally in a flame. That's supernatural travel. That is from one gateway to gateway in Shamaim, and he travels supernaturally. So that's how I'm defining teleport that is there. Here's Ezekiel 1:3. The word of Yahuwah came expressly to Yehezkel, Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Kazdim by the river Kabar, and the hand of Yahuwah came upon him there. Verse 12, the Spirit lifted me up, and behind me I heard the sound of a great rumbling voice. Blessed be the Kabod, the esteem, the glory of Yahuwah from his place. Verse 13, and the sound of the wings of the living creatures touching one another and the wheels beside them. So he's seeing this event. And then we have here in verse 14, a sound of a great rushing. Verse 14, and the Ruach lifted me and took me away. The Ruach lifted him and from where he was and took him away, and I went in bitterness in the heat of my Ruach with the hand of Yahuwah was strong upon me, and I came to the exiles at Tel Abib who were dwelling by the river Kabar, and I sat where they were sitting and sat there stunned among them 7 days. He sat there stunned. He just saw a lot of supernatural things from chapter 1, 2, and now 3, and then he sits there at the river Kabar stunned over what he had saw. Now, I want to put this in context. I got to move a little quick. I want to establish first teleportation as a scripturally found miracle, uncommon, but not so commonly known. And then we're going to connect this in with the two witnesses. I'm going to build my case that it is Moshe and Eliyahu. So here is Eliyahu. Advise you to go look this in context. Basically, I'm going to kind of summarize some points here. Obadiah, what he does is in chapter 17, verses 1, Eliyahu prays that no rain falls in the days of his ministry. And we learn later that's 3.5 years. James chapter 5:17 talks about that in a passage in Luke that we can cover here in a little bit. So he prays in 1 Kings 17:1 that no rain falls in the days of his ministry. Now here we have in chapter 18, King Ahab, is like, things are kind of messed up. Go find Eliyahu. He's sending everyone to go find Eliyahu because he's like, we need rain. My kingdom that I've been entrusted with is falling apart and things are seriously problematic. So Obadiahu is one of the many that is trying to find Eliyahu. Obadiah is trying to find Elijah. So here we have him as we cover in 1 Kings, you know, before verse 10 here, that when he sees Eliyahu, when Obadiah sees Elijah, he says, "Is that you, Adonai? Is that you, my Adonai?" And then he says, "It is I." And then he says here in verse 10, "As Yahuwah your Elohim lives, there is no nation or kingdom where my master," that's Ahab, "has not sent to look for you. And when they said he is not here, he made the kingdom, the reign or nation swear that they could not find you." Verse 11, "And now you say, go say to your master, Eliyahu is here." So he's saying, and now you're telling me to go tell Ahab that you're here. And it shall be, here's verse 12, "And it shall be as soon as I am gone from you that the Ruach of Yahuwah takes you away to a place I do not know. And I shall come to report to Ahab, and when he does not find you, he shall kill me, but I, your servant, have feared Yahuwah from my youth." Here he's saying in 1 Kings 18:12 that the Ruach, that he is well known, and they're looking for him all over. And then Obadiah, when he finally finds Elijah, when Obadiahu finds Eliyahu, he says that, "You're telling me that you're going to be here? I know what's going to happen," because he's trying to kill you. Jezebel's trying to kill you. "That as soon as I leave, you're going to supernaturally be moved again." Eliyahu was trained. It's a spiritual gift, just like there's gifts of healings, and there's, you know, first apostles, and then prophets, and then teachers, you know, and there's different spiritual gifts that are there. Resurrection is a spiritual gift that is, all the gifts are controlled by the Father, and the Father does resurrection through an individual that he's working with, and then resurrects the person through one of his servants. And so we also have spiritual healings, that the Father does spiritual healings on someone. All miracles are done by the Father through a conduit, whatever you want to call it, through an individual, and then the healing is done on the person that's done. Well, teleportation is also a spiritual gift that is not in control by the person, but that the Father can do through that person, and it is established here in the Scriptures. So we have here where Elijah was taken up, 2 Kings 2:11, and it came to be as they continued on and spoke that, "See, a chariot of fire with horses of fire, which separated the two of them, and Eliyahu went up by a whirlwind into the heavens." Now, he sees this chariot, and then he goes up by a whirlwind into the heavens. So he's here on earth. What is a whirlwind? Maybe a tornado, something that's whirling around, and then he is lifted up and supernaturally goes up into the heavens, and we don't see him, and we haven't seen him for 2,000 years, except for one point in the Scriptures, the Transfiguration of the Mount. But we'll come to that here in a little bit. So let's look now in some New Testament verses of teleportation, supernatural travel. Acts 8:39 and 40, "And when they came up out of the water, the Ruach of Yahuwah caught Philip away, and the eunuch saw him no more, for he went his way rejoicing. Philip, however, was found at Ashdod. And passing through, he brought the Bessorah in all the cities until he came to Caesarea." So we have Philip, he baptizes the eunuch, and as soon as he pulls the eunuch up, the Ruach of Yahuwah picks him up, supernaturally moves him somewhere else. Teleportation. Whatever you want to call that word, supernatural travel, it is a spiritual gift that the Father used, and he did this with Philip. Let's do another one. This one's really, really powerful. I really like this. I believe that Apostle Paul is talking about himself here, being humble, but you know, you can take for that as you will. 2 Corinthians 12:2-3, "I know a man in Messiah who 14 years ago, whether in the body, I do not know, whether out of the body, I do not know, Elohim knows. Such a one was caught up to the third heaven. And I know such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, Elohim knows, that he was caught up into paradise and heard unspeakable words, which is not right for a man to speak." So what he's saying is that he doesn't know whether he's in the body or out of the body, in the spirit or in the body, he doesn't know. But if one was not possible and the other was possible, then he would know which one it was. That means that both are possible. That it's possible to be caught up into the third heaven, in the spirit or in the body. And he doesn't know which one is which, but he knows that both are possible. That's supernatural form of travel. So what is the third heaven? We can theorize on that. I tend to lean towards this way, but if someone has a different understanding, please get with me after and show me. We have the first heaven, which is where planes fly. We have the second heaven, which is the firmament, whatever you want to call that, space. And then we have the third heaven, which is dimensional. It is something on the spirit realm. It is not made of this creation. It is something else that is there, the third heaven. And so we have here, again, in 2 Corinthians 12:2, "Whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. He was caught up into the third heaven." Let's do another one. They might or might not, and I'll explain why they might or might not, but they are something supernatural for sure. But we'll get into it as we see here in Luke 24:29. "But they urged him strongly, saying, Stay with us, for it is toward evening, and the day was declined. And he went in to stay with them. And it came to be, when he sat at the table with them, having taken the bread, he blessed, and having broken, he was giving it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and that noise I added, and he disappeared from their sight." And so that means that he's there in the room, and then all of a sudden, He disappeared. He's gone. Did he turn invisible? Don't know, maybe. Did he teleport out of there? Did he supernaturally travel out of there? Regardless, it's if someone disappeared right in front of me, I'm not going to say that's natural. That's something supernatural that is there. So that's why I say might or might not. He could have either disappeared or he could have teleported out of there. It's a form of supernatural something. So in Luke 24:36, and as they were saying this himself, Yahushua himself, sorry, the text got back, I didn't see that, stood in the midst of them and said to them, peace to you. And then this is when it said that he disappeared from their sight. Sorry, I didn't have that on air. So in John 20:19, this is another event of the same event. When therefore it was evening on that day one of the week, and when the doors were shut, where the taught ones met for fear of the Yahudim, Yahushua came and stood in the midst saying, peace to you. So the doors are all locked. They're all in a room. And then all of a sudden, in their midst, he appears. How did he get there? But I want to share now, and the final piece I want to share with supernatural travel is in John 6:16 through 21. And when evening came, his Talmudim, his taught ones, went down to the sea, and entering the boat, they were going over the sea toward Capernaum, and it had already become dark, and Yahushua had not yet come to them, and the sea was rising because a great wind was blowing, and when they had rowed about 25 or 30 stadia, that's about 3 or 4 miles, about 5 or 6 kilometers, they saw walking on the sea coming, Yahushua coming near on the boat, and they were afraid. And he said to them, it is I, do not be afraid. Now here we have in verse 21 and 22, they wished therefore to take him in the boat. So we have a supernatural event. They're about 3 or 4 miles out in the water. He's walking on the water in a supernatural event. That's not normal. If I see someone walking on the water, there's definitely something going on there. And it says here in verse 21, they wished therefore to take him in the boat, and at once the boat was at the land where they were going. Messiah, he teleported the entire boat, the crew, and the captain in the middle of the Sea of Galilee from where they were at once to the water on the other side, or to the dock on the other side. And it has here in verse 22 that the next day, the crowd was standing on the other side of the sea, saw that there was no other boat there except that one which his Talmudim, his taught ones, had entered, and that Yahushua had not entered the boat with his Talmudim, but his Talmudim went away alone. But other boats came from Kinnereth near the place where they ate bread after the master had given thanks. So what we have here is that people notice, they're like, how did he get here? I saw the disciples leave and in the boat, but he was over here, and there's not a way to get over here unless by boat. And then all of a sudden, they're over here, and he's there with them. How did that happen? So people picked up that something supernatural happened. They didn't realize he's walking on the water, stepped into the boat, and the whole boat from where it was at just at once appeared to the other side on the land where they're going. That's a supernatural form of travel. So we covered that. Now, first, what I'd like to share, now we're going to get into the two witnesses, because I want to establish where we're at, that supernatural travel, teleportation, is scripturally found. Now, again, you know, imagine 3,500 years ago, and I'm trying to talk to you about resurrection, that it is possible, you know, it might not be the easiest to wrap your head around in the beginning, but now resurrection is established, and we have scriptures here about supernatural travel, so I understand if some people might not want to, maybe, they want to maybe kind of normalize that. They want to, well, when Philip baptized the eunuch, he just quickly ran out of the way real quick so that he couldn't be seen anymore. Or the boat was in the middle of the water, and at once they were, you know, and you try to, it is, it's, people want to rationalize supernatural events. You know, they want to, it, because it's supernatural. It makes you question your sanity, so to speak. But before we get into that, I want to share in the two witnesses, what we have is we have in Revelation chapter 11, verses 2 and 3, we have Revelation 11, 2, 42 months. In Revelation 11, 3, we have 1,260 days. I believe that those two are connected, showing that 1,260 days is equal to 42 months. But then in Revelation chapter 12, verses 6 and 14, we have the woman carried away in the wilderness for 1,260 days in verse 6, and then in verse 14 is for time, times, and half a time. So we have that times a half a time, and 1,260 days are equivalents. So in chapter 11, we have 42 months and 1,260 days equivalent, and then we have 1,260 days and times a half a time equivalent. Then in the next chapter, in Revelation chapter 13:5, we have 42 months of the beast rising, which the connecting scripture with that is Daniel chapter 7:25, where you have times a half a time. So you have times a half a time is equal to 42 months, and 1,260 days is equal to times a half a time, and 42 months is equal to 1,260 days. So I will ask, which is longer, 1 foot, 12 inches, or 24 half inches? Right? Which is longer, 42 months, 1,260 days, times a half a time. Now, according to Daniel, and here I have it up on screen, Daniel chapter 4, verse 25, we have it say 7 times. 4:29, the same event, it talks about 12 months a year. And then in Daniel 4:32, we have 7 seasons. A season is another way of saying years. So we have seasons or years and times being connected. So when we have times and a half a time, we have times, plural years, singular year, half a year. And the common consensus is that times is 2, and I would agree with this one. Times is 2, 2 years. Time is 1 year. A half a times is a half a year. 2 plus 1 and a half is 3.5 years. But let's get some conclusion on that, because the Father does this all the time. He tells one group of people, okay, I want you to count on the day of the wave sheaf offering, I want you to count 7 complete Sabbaths, and the morrow after the 7th Sabbath is Shavuot. Okay, you come from the same location, count 50 days. Where did you get this day? Where did you get the same day? Huh, so we have 2 different ways of counting to find the same day. He does the same thing here, so let's do some math. Before we get into there, let's first establish one point. Genesis chapter 7:11, Genesis chapter 7:24, and do I have it up here? And I don't, it's okay, I haven't memorized. In Genesis chapter 7:11, Genesis chapter 7:24, Genesis chapter 8:3, and Genesis chapter 8:4. What we have is, now the Masoretic text will say month 2, day 17. The Septuagint will say month 2, day 27, but it doesn't change the difference between the Septuagint or the Masoretic, because in Genesis 8:3, it says month 7, day 17, and Septuagint, month 7, day 27. So you have 27 and 27, or 17 and 17, it's the same demarcation point. So you have month 2 in Genesis 7:11, and then month 7 in Genesis 8:4. So you have, let's use the Masoretic to keep it simple. We have 7:17 and 2:17. The 17s are on the same demarcation point of the Chodesh, the same count. So that means that we're dealing with full, whole Chodesh. So you have 7 minus 2 equals 5. And then it says in Genesis 7:24 that the waters were mighty for 150 days. And then in 8:3, it says at the end of the 150 days, showing you that it's a full 150 days. So what you have is 5 whole months inside of 150 days. So 150 divided by 5 is precisely 30 days in a month. So, and I can show you other locations other than just this. We have in Daniel 4:29, 12 months is a year. We have in Revelation 22:1-2, the 12 trees would bear 12 fruits, each in their given month, 12 months in a year. Yes, we're in a 13th year period in time, and yes, that is scripturally approved according to the Ezekiel code. It's a whole different set of calculations that are there, but they believed that when you use this number back in Genesis and here in the future, that there was precisely 30 days in a month cycle, and there was exactly 360 days in a year cycle. And when you take 360 divided by 12, you get 30 days in a month. So now that we have that understanding, if you take 42 months and multiply it by 30 days, 42 times 30 is 1,260 days. If you take 40, and then we have 1,260 days divided by 360 days in a year, you get precisely times a half a time, 3.5 years. So that means that using the Genesis code in connecting with what it's saying in Revelation is that back in the day and in the future, using the 360 code, and when you understand that you can't have in our calendrical system today exactly 360 days in a year, and you can't have exactly 30 days in a month cycle, and you can't have 12 months in a year cycle, because our system today doesn't work historically. And when you look at old calendars outside of just scriptural calendars, around 701 BC, and that time that date can be, you know, wiggle room, you know, when we're looking back in the past, you know, what, 2700 years ago, we can get a little bit wrong here and there. But that means that when you look historically, all the calendars in the world about 701 BC changed from 360 days in a year to what we have here today. And what happened during that period in time? Hezekiah's sundial went back 10 degrees. So they theorize that when Hezekiah's sundial went back 10 degrees, it changed the celestial orbital body in our calendars. And so I believe that here in the near future, when the two witnesses arrive, the calendar is going to go back to 360 days in a year, which would be a worldwide event. I think everyone would be talking about that, because when the two witnesses are on scene, the media is going to be like trying to hide it, trying to manipulate it, putting their false wolves in sheep's clothing in place once the word starts to get out. And we need to know when that event happens, because when the two witnesses die, the beast kingdom rises. And we have that in Revelation 11, 7 and 8. And when they, and let's look at that here. And so let's go to Revelation chapter 11, and let's read this location and put it up on screen. 7 and 8, and when they have ended their witness, the beast coming up out of the pit of the deep shall fight against them and overcome them and kill them, and their dead bodies lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Mizraim, Egypt, where also our Adonai was crucified, impaled. Our Adonai was crucified, impaled, according to he himself, in Luke chapter 13, 33b, Jerusalem. So that means that the two witnesses die in Jerusalem. And so that means that the beast ending their witness comes up out of the pit of the deep, and then this is when that beast kingdom comes up, when the two witnesses die. The two witnesses give us a 1,260-day warning of a really, really scary event that is going to come upon the world. Woe to those pregnant and nursing in those days. Now, we are told to be fruitful and multiply. I believe that the Father gives us a time bubble to be able to know when to not be pregnant and nursing for those days, that great tribulation period in time. And I believe that he does so when the two witnesses come on scene. And because you can't have, in our calendrical system today, 1,260 days in exactly 3.5 years, which also equals 42 months, since those things that are there that are conferring three different ways of counting in the same amount of time, that something has to happen in the near future that is going to switch the calendrical system back to what it was in Noah's day and what it is going to be in the future according to exactly 12 months in a year. We are supposed to have a 13th month system. If you understand the 13th month system, it works like a thermostat. When you understand a thermostat, it's like when it's cold, it's getting colder, colder, colder. Let's say you have it set at 70. It gets down to, what, 65 or whatever, and then it kicks on, and then it kicks up. And then so the thermostat works like this. Because we don't have a perfect alignment like it used to be, we have a 13th month system that works like a thermostat to kind of balance and toggle out the year system that is there. And I don't want to get any more into that. I want to get into the two witnesses, and I want to now build the case for what time that we have left of that. So we have here, in verse 4, these are the two olive trees and the two lampstands that are standing before the Elohim of all the earth. If you look at certain translations, they will say the Lord of the earth, but this word here is Theos, that is there, the Elohim of the earth. Where do we find that? These two olive trees are the two lampstands. Well, we find that in the book of Zechariah, chapter 4, verse 14. Well, we'll look at some areas in verse 14 specifically. So he says here in verse 2, and two olive trees are by it, one on the right of the bowl and the other at its left. What are these, my master? And then he's continuing to ask, and let's get the answer for time. Do you not know what these are? I said, no, my Adonai, in verse 14. And he said, these are the two anointed ones who stand beside Adonai of all the earth. Revelation 11:3, which is why they put the word Lord there in before. In Revelation 11:4, that's why some translation says the Lord of all the earth, and other translations will say the God or the Elohim of all the earth, because they're translating it here from Zechariah 4:14, which says Adonai. I think that the word Theos is there for a reason, for Elohim, and the word Adonai is there for a reason, because Adonai Elohim. Who is that? That's Messiah. That's there. He's standing beside, and when, what is it that the two witnesses witness? He says here, my witnesses. He says, let's see if I can go back here real quick. He says, my witnesses. He says here, the witness of the word of Elohim and the witness of Yahushua, Messiah, to all he saw. Am I not in? Oh, I'm in Revelation 1. It says Revelation 11. Okay, let's go to the 11. Here we have here, and I shall give unto my two witnesses, he says here, which would be a red lettering here, my witnesses, and they shall prophesy for 1,260 days clad in sackcloth. What is it that they witness? Now, let's see if I can get to this real quick. We're running low on time, and I wanna skip forward here. See, some would say that John the Baptist is Eliyahu. And so here we have in Matthew 11, 13, 14, and 15, for all the prophets and Torah prophesied till Yahuchanan, John, and if you wish to accept it, he is Eliyahu who was, past tense, about to come. He who hears, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. Why does it say he who has ears to hear, let him hear? There's a code here, because he's saying here who was about to come. And then what we have here in Matthew chapter 17, 10, and Matthew 17, 1 through 4 is the transfiguration of the mount. And now we have in Matthew 17, 10, and his Talmudim asked him, saying, why then do the scribes say that Eliyahu has to come first? And Yahushua answering said to them, Eliyahu, now if you look in Matthew, just a few chapters earlier, John the Baptist had already died. Eliyahu is indeed coming, future tense, first, and shall, future tense, restore all. But I say to you that Eliyahu has already come, past tense, and they did not recognize him, but did to him whatever they wish. In this way, the son of Adam is also about to suffer by them. Then the taught ones understood that he had spoken to them about Yahuchanan the Immerser, about John the Baptist. Yes, he's talking about John the Baptist in the past tense, Matthew 7:12, that Eliyahu has already come. That is past tense. But in future tense, we'll read that again in verse 11, he's talking about two Eliyahu. Why did Eliyahu rip his garment in two pieces? Because there was that John the Baptist who come in this power and spirit, but in John chapter 1, go look at it, time is short. John chapter 1, they asked him, are you Christ? He says, I'm not Christ, or I'm not the Messiah. And then they asked him, I'm used to sometimes talking to people that don't have the understanding of Christ and Messiah, so excuse me as I code things here for those to understand. He says, I am not the Messiah. And then they asked him, are you the prophet? What prophet are they talking about? The prophet that is mentioned in the prophecy of Deuteronomy 18, 15 through 18, the one that is confirmed in Acts chapter 3 as being Moshiach, as the prophet with a capital P. And they ask him, are you that prophet? No. And they ask him, are you Eliyahu? No. Why are they asking him about the prophet, about the Messiah, and about Eliyahu? Because those are three people, three individuals that are prophesied to come. The prophet in Deuteronomy 18 is prophesied to come, which is Yahushua HaMashiach, and then we have the Messiah, well, which is the Messiah, which is prophesied to come, and then we also have Eliyahu. And so they're asking John the Baptist, are you Eliyahu? He says, no, I am not. So I understand that Matthew here says in Matthew 11, 13 through 15, that if you wish to accept that he is Eliyahu who was about to come, that is a correct statement. But that's why he says, he who has ears to hear, let him hear, because there is a secret code of Eliyahu which is to come. So let's look here briefly, and let's get into the prophecy of this. This is Malachi. This is the prophecy that they're waiting on, the prophecy that we should all be waiting on. Here we see Moses, the Torah of Moshe, being connected here with Eliyah. At verse 5 specifically, see, I am sending you Eliyah, the prophet, before the coming of the great and awesome day of Yahuwah. That word for send is shalach. It's to stretch forth, to shoot out, is to shoot. It is to stretch forth. He's saying here that he is going to shoot Eliyahu before the great and awesome day. So let's get into some quick things, and then I want to do a visual demonstration. I have had this information. I got some revelational pieces of it through a vision, like about 4 years ago. And then I had a dream telling me that I had to produce this on video over this past summer. And then when I woke up from that dream, I'm pulling the information out of my head because I hadn't written it yet. And then pulling this out of my head, I'm given another revelation on the Transfiguration of the Mount. And I want to do a visual representation of the timeline understanding. But first, I want to say that the two witnesses, possess authority to shut the heavens so that no rain falls in the days of their prophecy. That is a key understanding of what Eliyahu did. He prayed in 1 Kings chapter 17, verse 1, that no rain fell in the days of his ministry. That is confirmed in a passage in Luke, it's slipping my mind the location, but also confirmed in James chapter 5, 17, that says it was 3.5 years. 3.5, which is that times and half a time when you understand the 360 code that was there. So that means that 1260 days also means 3.5 years. So that means for 3.5 years that they shut the heaven, that no rain falls on the days of their prophecy. And I believe that those two signs are the two signs of the two witnesses that they have arrived on scene. They're going to blame it on climate change, is what I believe. We can theorize that. Let's put it in our bag of what ifs if you want. If you don't want to believe it, that's okay. Put it in the bag of what ifs. But if these two signs happen in the same period in time, then you understand that the two witnesses have begun their prophecy, and woe to those pregnant and nursing 1,260 days later during that great tribulation period in time. They possessed the authority to shut the heaven, no rain. Going to blame it on climate change. We told you not to use your diesel trucks and your gas-powered cars. We told you to eat bugs and to do this. And now look, there's no rain on the whole earth because of climate change. And the believers that know the signs to come are going to be like, no. According to what the whole world shifted into an old calendrical, into 360 days in a year. When these events, if that is correct, if the theory of this is correct, those are two wild. They are extreme events in the earth that cannot be concealed. And if those two events happen, which I believe that when the two witnesses arrive, we need to know as believers and can't trust in the media. We need to know as believers that they have started so that we can start making final preparations for that great tribulation period in time. But during that period in time, there's going to be a lesser persecution. And here we also had that this no authority to shut the heavens so that no rain falls in the days of their prophecy. That's a code of Elijah. And then we have they possess authority over waters to turn them to blood and to smite the earth with all the plagues as often they wish. Moses was given three signs: staff, serpent, staff, and then he had hand, normal, leprosy, normal, and then he had a bowl of water and then poured out and it's blood. So water to blood was the third and final sign to convince those that he was sent by the Father. And then we know the first plague. Yahuwah told Moshe to tell Aharon to put the staff into the water and then water to blood. So we have two aspects here of Moses and Elijah. But the key thing is to understand who it was that they witnessed. So I asked three brothers, these three brothers here to come up, and we're going to do a visual representation. And this is what I got in two separate revelations of understanding some timeline. We are linear people. We have birth, we have death, and then we have a linear. So I want here, brother. I need you to stand for the camera, like here. Okay, and then you two are there. All right. Yeah, that's good, right there. Just try to stay in a line here, and try not to trip on the cords. So stop. Okay, you stop. All right. What we have here is on timeline. We have Moshe, we have Eliyahu, and then we have HaMashiach over here. This is a timeline. And I'm going to explain how I come to understand the Transfiguration of the Mount through a revelation. We have to test spirits. So let's test it against it. We have Moshe. He sees the burning bush. He gets called into his mission. He goes down, go down into Egypt. Let my people go. 10 plagues. Go through the Red Sea. He goes to Mount Sinai. Moses did a 40-day fast, only no food, no water. Eliyahu did a 40-day fast, no food, no water. And so did Yahushua HaMashiach do a 40-day fast, no food, no water. Those three are the only three that did. He's on Mount Sinai on his 40-day fast. At the end, he's on Mount Sinai on his 40-day fast. The transfiguration of the mount, whether it was Mount Sinai or not, in Matthew chapter 17, and then Luke and Mark chapter 9, it just says a high mountain. Whether it was Mount Sinai or not, he is on a high mountain. What we have here is he, you know, let my people go, Exodus out of Egypt, goes to Mount Sinai. While he's on Mount Sinai, the transfiguration of the mount was a what I believe to be a triple event horizon. That's a fold in space-time. So when Messiah does in the future, but the lamb slain from the foundation of the world, if you try to wrap your head around that, when he sees, when the fold in space-time happened, we have Moshe on Mount Sinai on his 40-day fast, and when he goes up on Mount Sinai, come here, come on, we gotta run. He comes over here, and he's one of the two witnesses to witness the event. After this event, these two talk about something in the end days that is important for them to talk here in the near future in the end days. They have a conversation. Read about it in Luke and Mark chapter 9. After that event happens, come on, come on. Time is short. We got to go. Okay. And then he's here. And then he comes down, golden calf incident, wander in the wilderness for 40 years. He goes to the edge of the promised land, and in Deuteronomy chapter 34, I think it's verse 5, Moses dies. 500 years, and that's 1,500 years approximately from Moshe to Moshiach. So he's teleported 1,500 years into the future, goes back to his own timeline, then dies. 500 years later, we have Eliyahu called into a prophet. Prays that no rain falls in the days of his ministry. The showdown of the prophets of Baal. If Yahuwah is Elohim, follow him. If Baal, follow him. The people answered not a word because they need Eliyahu to make the way straight. And then he gets scared after the altar is accepted. Jezebel's after him. He fasts for 40 days, 40 nights. He goes to Mount Sinai. Somewhere in that period in time, he runs here to the other side. He witnesses the transfiguration of the mount. After that event happens, he runs, comes back to his timeline. It's a fold in space-time. He's at his timeline, and then he comes back down, is told to anoint Elisha, and then he goes over the river Yarden, flaming chariot, goes up in the whirlwind, poof, is Shalach. We'll get into that in a minute. Then 1,000 years later, we have Yahushua HaMashiach, and he goes about his ministry. At the end of his ministry, probably the greatest, or next to the resurrection equivalent, wherever you put it, it's the two greatest miracles in scriptural history, is the resurrection of Messiah and the transfiguration of Messiah. Why? Because he's like, watch this, guys. Fleshly body, I can die. Why? He's like, this is what it's going to look like when you have the second body, when you have the upgraded body, the body of light, the one that's mentioned in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, the twinkling of an eye, second death possesses no authority over these. I'm immortal and untouchable, can't be touched, but I got to go die on the cross, goes back into flesh. When he powers up, whatever you want to call that, when he is shining like light, is made of light, when he uses that energy, I mean, both of you, a fold in space-time happens, and the two witnesses witness the transfiguration of the mount. They are the anointed ones who stand beside Adonai Elohim of all the earth, and they witness this event. We have truth. We have Amunah. We have the commandments. We have the spirit. We have spirit and truth that we need to walk in. It's the representation that we need, because it's not just Moses that gets us into the promised land, the following of the commandments. It's not just the Ruach, the Amunah that gets us into the promised land of promised lands. It is spirit and truth. And this is what the message of the two witnesses. And after that event happens, you guys go back, that event happens. So, one last thing. I'm a little over, 30 seconds over. One last thing I'll share here. Stay there. So, in Malachi 4:4 and 4:5, it says that I shall shalach Eliyahu. Shalach, to stretch forth what I believe has happened. And I heard, this is the first, this is what gave me this understanding. This is the revelation that I had like 3.5 years ago. was Nathaniel, as in the days of Noah. I'm like, yes, as in the days of Noah. Nathaniel, as in the days of Noah. And I'm like, okay, and it brings my mind all the crazy stuff mentioned in Genesis 6, genetic modification, you know, Nephilim, all that stuff that we kind of conspiratorial talk about and all that things. As in the days of Noah, yes, Adonai, as in the days of Noah. And then he says, again, Nathaniel, as in the days of Noah. And I'm like, yes, as, and he goes, what are you missing? I'm like, I don't know. And he goes, there's no Noah. There's no one perfect in his generations. There's no one that is there in this world today. They've eaten a GMO fruit. They've gotten too close to Wi-Fi. There's some level of little genetic corruption that is there, but there is some level that is there. All flesh has had some impurification in it. There's not a single pure bloodline like there was. He goes, but I knew that. That is why I shalach Eliyahu. And what I saw in this vision was I saw the Father from when Eliyahu went up in the whirlwind, I saw like a portal open up and him get loaded on a bow. And he's like, okay, 3,000 years into the future, this past you, 2,000 years past Messiah, 3,000 years, and when I say just 3,000 years in the future, he's like, okay, it's got to be on a Shavuoth. I can explain that, don't have time. Okay, Hezekiah's sundial. Move back 10 degrees, change the calculations. We won that battle. Satan got that one. Oh, we got this one. Okay, here's the year, got it. The month, here's the week, the day, the minute, the second, Eliyahu, and then sends him through. And keep going, and then here in the near future, the portal, stop. The portal is going to open from 3,000 years ago. Eliyahu comes through that time portal. Finally, what I will say is this, is how can it be Moshe? He's been dead for 3,500 years. According to our timeline where he's at now, he's been gone for 3,500 years. Jude 1:9. And Michael the archangel, Satan was disputing against the body of Moshe. Michael the archangel had to come down and say, Yahuwah rebuke you, so as not to have a blasphemous statement. Why? You're like speaking foolishly here for a minute. Body of Moses. What do we care about the body of Moses? He's been gone for 3,500 years. Makes no relevance in the end days. Has no reference to that. Why should we care about the body of Moses? But wait, he sent Michael the archangel. Why was Satan disputing about the body of Moshe? I believe because when the two witnesses arrive on scene, we get a super teleportation from 3,000 years ago here in the near future, and Eliyahu is going to go to the conveniently located bones of Moshe. He's going to touch the bones of Moshe, and Eliyahu is trained in teleportation and the spiritual gift of resurrection all comes through the Father, and Moses is going to, you can go run and then you're good. Moses is going to resurrect in the end days as Lazarus resurrected, as the boy that Eliyahu resurrected. They resurrected and then they died again. Moses and Eliyahu in the end days. I got this because I had understanding of Babylon the Great. I have a teaching on this in one of the breakout rooms later, 144,000. I had Mark of the Beast. Some sister came up to me after one study, in the very end, I'll close off. Sorry, I'm a little bit over. Some sister came up to me and said, Nathaniel, you got so much dark stuff. I mean, it's good to know Babylon the Great and good to know Mark of the Beast and good to know this. Do you have anything uplifting? Do you have anything like of hope? And I'm like, that's a valid statement. I'm like, it's a valid statement. And so I went home and prayed, and that's when my understanding was opened up with 144,000, and that's when my understanding was opened up on the two witnesses. Brothers and sisters, we have Ruach reinforcements coming here soon. We are fighting a losing battle. They got nanotechnology. They're attacking us in crazy ways that we can't even fight against. Ruach reinforcements are coming. The two witnesses are coming. In the 144,000 get anointed. We have protection coming here in the end days to prepare us for when that beast kingdom rises, because it is going to be a terrifying, it has never happened, never will happen again in all of history. It is like hair-raising stuff when you understand even a smidgen of the depth of what that is. So that's what I wanted to share on the two witnesses. I hope that you understand. I have a lot more data to share on that. Oh, one final piece I'll give. Luke chapter 16, the rich man and Lazarus parable. What does it say? What, you guys can sit down now. Thank you. What does it say? And then we'll do questions and answer after this. What does it say in Luke chapter 16? Of the rich man and Lazarus parable, you know, he speaks to him in parables about the certain rich man. And then he says, I beg you, Father, that's Abraham he's talking to. He says, for I have five brothers. Let him warn them. Let they also come to this place of torture. And Abraham said to him, they have Moshe and the prophets. Let him hear them. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but if someone from the dead goes to them, they shall repent. But he said to them, if they do not hear Moshe and the prophets, neither would they be persuaded, even if one should rise from the dead. That's a prophecy that people don't pick up on. He says, oh, you don't believe me. you don't believe me that they're not going to repent. You don't believe me. Okay, fine. I'll bring Moses up from the dead, and I'll bring Eliyahu from the past, and I'm going to bring Moses and Eliyahu, who they claim to really love very much, and they're going to go to Jerusalem and prophesy for 1,260 days, and they're still not going to believe me. You don't believe me? I'll even do that in the parable. If they do not hear Moshe and the prophets, neither would be persuaded, even if one should rise from the dead. That is my understanding on the two witnesses. I have so much more. I'm over time. Thank you for that. And I appreciate your disagreements, and I welcome them.
Questions?
Do you think there will be like a pre-shadowing of that actual time? Because the things that are going on right now are really weird about the droughts that are going on all over the globe. I'm almost 60, and I've never seen what's going on today happen before. You've got water turning red. You know, there's different things going on all over that's been reported, and like in China. Is there going to be a pre-shadowing of that time, or are we like already in it?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're already in it. And that word nation against nation, kingdom against kingdom, not the greatest translation. Ethnos against ethnos and basilia against basilia. Race against race and country against country. Race wars in Matthew 7:24, more than ever happened before. And kingdom wars that are happening. And scarcity of food, deadly diseases, shmovid, and earthquakes in places that are there. And we can even say that the cure was the disease, if you want to get weird on it. These are the beginnings of birth pains. Yes, there's going to be shadow types and pictures. One other thing also, we have to be concerned about Matthew 24:24 for false messiahs and false prophets. Moshe is a derivative of Messiah. Eliyahu is a prophet. False messiahs and false prophets, we might see false two witnesses arrive on scene. We need to prepare ourselves now to know who the real two witnesses are, and those who are maybe of the 144,000 versus the counterfeits. And that's what we're preparing for now, and also sowing the seeds and trying to get all of the lost sheep woken up and prepared and ready mentally. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, lots of. I think that the two witnesses, when that happens, we're going to see maybe a major earthquake or a series of earthquakes if the calendar goes back. I think that's what's going to happen. I think that we are no longer going to need a 13th month. We need it now, but when the calendar shifts, I think that we're not going to need it anymore. And all this calendar confusion, we can come to alignment eventually on it. Yeah. Yeah.
What year was it that you said that the timing of the year moved from the 360, and what was the event that caused that? I missed it.
Yeah, about 701 BC, when Hezekiah and the sundial moved. See, when Joshua's day, when the sun, according to their perspective, and moon stood still in the sky, we don't have a shift of sun and moon in Earth celestial body rotation, but in Hezekiah's day, the sundial moved back 10 degrees. However that looked like, I have no idea how that looked like, but the sun moved back 10 degrees. We can speculate when we have understanding of whatever shape that you're at, we can speculate however that looked, whatever that is, you know, it's simple. I don't even want to get into it. It's however that looked that we have speculation on. The sundial moved back. So according to Earth or sun, position moved and the sundial shadow moved back, but it doesn't say anything about the moon. That's why more days in a year and less days in a moon cycle. Something shifted in Hezekiah's day.
Hang on.
I can expand on this in the Hebrew clock squawk that I have. It's a teen class, but according to scriptural calendar, we are demarcation to demarcation. We are observation to observation. Wherever you're at on observation, sundown to sundown, tekufa to tekufa, you know, equinox to equinox, wherever you're at, chodesh to chodesh, whatever demarcation point you pick, it has nothing to do with grains of sand falling through an hourglass, or my watch here is according to the atomic clock, which is according to the pulse of a decaying atom, and that pulse is in nanoseconds, which makes a second, which makes our time on atomic clock, which is just a fancy way of having grains of sand in an hourglass. That is not how time is. And the Father disproves Satan's theology and with Joshua's day and Hezekiah's day, is that we are demarcation to demarcation. There is not a specific, you know, precise 360 days in a year, or 365.242919 days in a year, or 29.53 days in a moon cycle. We are demarcation to demarcation. And I think on that Satan didn't understand that, and Satan thought that it was precisely calculated, and he didn't realize that the calendar can expand and contract. And so Satan made his long-range plans in the future, and then the Father was like, you thought that it was time that you're cutting? No. Here, I'll expand year, I'll contract month, I'll shorten day, and now all your plans that you made thousands of years earlier is all hogwash as you try to attack me on my set-apart days. But that's a different topic. Yeah, I think it's spiritual warfare of a really wild understanding. Yeah.
So I assume that because they're going to be, the two witnesses are appearing in Jerusalem, which the scripture says is spiritually called Sodom and Gomorrah, that is a two-part question. One, that the people over there would be doing the wrong thing at this time. Of course, the whole world would be doing the wrong thing, but specifically, those people over there would be doing the wrong thing, hence the need for witnesses. And two, you are still saying that the two witnesses, even if Elijah has to raise Moses back to life, that they will both be killed as it's prophesied, and then both raise again, correct?
Yes, yeah, and that 3.5 days could be day for years, so that could be 42 months also, because 3.5 days, according to day for a year, would be 3.5 years, and then that could be that, what you're talking about on that. Interestingly, when you talk about the revelation point, notice the cloud with the two witnesses. There's a cloud, and there's also that same cloud in the transfiguration, and then there's also the cloud on Mount Sinai with Moses and Elijah. But when has Jerusalem ever been destroyed because they're doing the right thing? So I think the answer is already in the question, that that they are so it's spiritually called Sodom and Mitzrayim, Sodom and Egypt. Sodom is a form of spiritual Sodom, spiritual Egypt. Sodom is a form of depravity, which would be idolatry and adultery. And then Egypt is a form of slavery. So you have spiritual idolatry, adultery, and slavery. And both Sodom and Egypt had an Exodus level event. So Genesis 19, Lot made unleavened bread for the two Malachim, the two angels that came in. Then they had an Exodus out of Sodom. They believe that that was a precursor on the same day as Chag Matzoth in the day 15 of month one of the actual Exodus event. But both Sodom and Egypt had an Exodus level event on a Passover markation. I believe that is a sign that the two witnesses die on or right around a Passover, because then 3.5 years later would be the fall feast days when Messiah returns, and so it makes sense to me on that. So so when do they ever get destroyed? When they're doing the right thing? Obviously, what was the other part? There's two parts. Yeah, they're still killed. Yeah, so you know, when Lazarus was resurrected, he died again. And when the boy Eliyahu, all done through the Father, when the Father resurrected that boy through Eliyahu, that boy was resurrected, and then he died again. So yeah, when Moshe, it's a level of resurrection, not of a second resurrection, not of the first resurrection of a second a human body 2.0 upgraded of light, but it would be like a super regular resurrection, if you will. Yeah. But they do die again. Yes.
In the Transfiguration, the disciples recognized it as being Moses and Elijah. Do you have any insight on how that they knew that was them?
only thing that I was just thinking about that just like an hour ago, actually. And the only thing that I could ever really, not an hour, maybe 2 hours ago, that I could think about was, have you ever been somewhere and just have like a knowing on it? You just have, maybe the Ruach tells you it is this. Have you ever had the Ruach just tell you, you go somewhere and the Ruach is like, this is what it is. Maybe you have a little bit of doubt within yourself, but then you realize, nope, that's exactly what it was. And it's like a faith confirmation thing. I think that on however level, how do they recognize it was Moshe and Eliyahu? That's an excellent question. And it's one that I can only theorize. The only thing that I could theorize is that they were told through the Ruach within them or over them that was Moshe and Eliyahu. So you basically had three witnesses to the two witnesses for the single transfiguration on the Mount Transfiguration on the Mount event. Oh, it was whether in the body or out of the body, I don't know. With Moshe and Eliyahu going on the Transfiguration of the Mount, I'm going to use 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 12, or 2:12. Whether they were in the body or out of the body, in the body or in the spirit, I know not. Of whether they what how that. Regardless, they were there to see that. And your question was the Transfiguration. Yeah, so if it was a vision, then likely it would be in the spirit. But regardless, their spirit was teleported in time 1,500 years and 1,000 years into the future.
All right, well, Ben, you win the last question button for this time due to time and such. Sorry to you guys over there.
Come see me afterward.
Thanks for an extreme download. That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Simple question, maybe not. What do you see the transition like between the sixth millennium that we've been through and the next one coming up?
Apartheid. I believe that there's going to be regular mortals here that are going to be here, and then there's going to be those that the second death possesses no authority over these. I think Daniel chapter 7 verses 11 and 12 talk about that. It says the rest of the beast, Daniel 7:11, is connected with Revelation 19:20. Beast and the false prophet thrown in the lake of fire burning with sulfur. And then this is just the beast thrown in the fire. Revelation 7:11 and 19:20 is connected. And then in the very next verse in Daniel 7:12, it says, and the rest of the beasts, that'd be the lion, the bear, and the leopard, had their authority taken away, but they were given a lengthening of life for a season and a time. I think that season is the 1,000-year reign, and that time is the time that Satan is released to mislead the nations again. So I think that there is going to be, just like when Manoah witnessed the angel of Yahuwah just up in the altar, likely those that the second death possesses no authority over these will have some type of supernatural travel to go into New Jerusalem before it touches down on earth again, that they rule on earth, but maybe their home is in New Jerusalem. That's theoretical, and I'm open to interpretation on that, but that's kind of where I see on that. I see that it is a period of restoration to both the spirit and then when those that are in that 1,000-year reign. We see, one final thing, we see those living and dying, scriptures about living and dying in the 1,000-year reign. If a child dies at, 100 years old, he died young. But then we also have scriptures of the second death possesses no authority over these and that they don't die. How does that answer itself? We see two things in there, and I think that might be an explanation for it, but a theory, yeah.
All right, Nathaniel, thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
Don't forget to pick up your children on the way out.